Hello, gentlemen.
Morgan.
This is David, and I believe, Dan, you are on the line, yes?
Yes, and do you have Morgan?
Morgan,
yes.
Are you there? Sorry for the delay.
Here.
You guys are ready to... Yes, Morgan, we hear you. And Dan, Morgan, we are here with just a little technical difficulty, but that's cleared up right now. You gentlemen can conduct your interview. Please carry on. Morgan, thank you for your patience.
Of course.
Good afternoon, Morgan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Fine, thank you. I have an incredible treat. Yesterday, my youngest grandchild and his parents arrived. We haven't physically seen him or them in a year and a half.
Oh, man, that's wonderful.
Yep, he's 5 years old, and we're having a great time. So it's really a great treat, and but also it's a great treat to have you on the show. So we're going to talk about things that are going crazy in Washington about legislation coming and going and what's going to happen and intensity and strength and all kinds of things. So that's really what I want to get an update, the first session, on what's going on right now in Washington as far as decriminalization of the product. And then the second interview, we'll talk about your feeling about the likelihood of something getting done.
That's fine. There haven't really been that many updates at the federal level since we last spoke, but we can just reiterate what's been going on and some of the general conversations that have been happening.
Yeah, but your organization has taken, I think, at least two, maybe three press releases on this issue in the last month or so or less.
We sent out a release early in March talking primarily about our opposition to potency caps and home cultivation bans. There was a safe banking reintroduction, which I think we may have already hit, but I'm not positive. And there are a couple of other smaller bills that have been introduced, but in terms of the broader, more comprehensive bills, we haven't seen draft language on those yet, and things are still kind of plodding along.
Okay, so let's get started. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the conversation, and we're talking about a legislative update. We have with us Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, who works in Washington and has been on our show many, many times. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. So there's a lot of things going on at the state level, the state legislatures, governors, threatening vetoes. Others are trying to get it done in record time. States that looked like they were going to take a long time are now rapidly moving towards adult use. And Schumer said recently in Washington that he hoped to have something in this session on a lot of stuff as far as cannabis. So give us the lay of the land, both at the federal level and what's going on in the states, if you would, please.
Absolutely. Just starting at the state level, last week we saw something that has never happened in the decade plus that I've been working on this issue, is that two state legislatures approved adult use cannabis bills in the same week, really within 48 hours of each other, in New York and New Mexico. The governor of New York has already signed that bill, and it looks like implementation is moving forward fairly rapidly. That was actually a pretty groundbreaking bill in that it is incredibly robust in terms of the restorative justice provisions and the amount of cannabis tax revenue that's going towards community reinvestment and supporting social equity applicants and licensees. New Mexico has been working on this issue for a while as well, and a similarly really positive bill passed there and is just awaiting signature from the governor there. And that basically means that so far in the first 3 months of 2021, we've seen three state legislatures pass legalization. And that is really unheard of, and I think is really indicative of the momentum and accelerated pace of reform that we're starting to see that was really kicked off with the passage of the Safe Banking Act, and then compounded by the ballot initiative victories on in November of last year, and then further compounded at the federal level by House passage of the MORE Act, which would remove cannabis from the schedule of controlled substances and provide a regulatory framework, as well as expunging the records of people who have been charged with federal cannabis-related crimes, and a number of other provisions that I think are going to help inform the conversation in Congress going forward. So moving into federal landscape, we've seen a number of bills introduced already. Both the House and the Senate have reintroduced the Safe Banking Act, which would provide safe harbor to financial institutions to be able to more easily work with cannabis businesses and open up things like traditional lending, which is incredibly important for small businesses that don't have access to deep financial networks. We saw the reintroduction of the Claims Act, which would basically provide the same sort of coverage, but for insurance companies, as opposed to banks and other financial institutions. And then a number of other bills are in the works. I believe that the Marijuana Data Collection Act is going to be reintroduced fairly shortly. And we are awaiting reintroduction of the MORE Act with probably a few changes from the version that was passed by the House last year. In particular, stripping out a provision that was added at the last minute before the vote that would allow federal regulators to ban people with felonies from being able to get federal cannabis business licenses, which kind of defeats the social justice intent of that bill. But I think that most of the attention has been on Senate Majority Leader Schumer, who, along with Senator Wyden and Senator Booker, have been prioritizing cannabis policy reform in their work this year and are expected to deliver draft legislation for a comprehensive bill similar to the MORE Act in that it deschedules cannabis and removes it from the Controlled Substances Act, but with probably some differences in terms of what the regulatory structure looks like and the sort of justice provisions that are contained within it. We still haven't seen that legislation yet, but we're expecting it any day, and Senator Schumer's team has been very proactive in engaging with stakeholders like NCIA and other groups to help inform their drafting of the legislation. So we're pretty hopeful that this is going to be a really good-looking bill and that it could potentially have far-reaching bipartisan support. Whether or not it could pass this year, I think, is a little bit tougher to tell and a little bit less likely than some of the more incremental measures, given that Republicans still have a fair amount of swing in the Senate, and the fact that traditionally they've been a little bit more in favor of incremental measures than more comprehensive measures. But that's starting to change as GOP lawmakers at both the state and federal level are starting to see that approval is shifting among their base.
Well, there's a ton of stuff there to unpack, and we only have about 8 minutes left. So let me just go to about one particular thing that seems to be in a lot of the state legislation involved and also in the federal legislation. And I will openly admit to you and my audience, I know very little about this. I hear about it. I've read about it, but I don't know what it means. I believe that I read recently there may be upwards to 50,000 people physically incarcerated on drug charges that under legislation would no longer be a crime. And my question to you is, if you have an answer or if not an opinion, are we going to let 50,000 people out of jail, out of prison, if this thing passes and they're coming out back into our society, or what's the likely outcome?
Well, so I'm not sure about that number, and I think that it's pretty difficult to be able to determine that because state-level prison system has a lot of different reporting methods than the federal system and the Bureau of Prisons. So, I think that number could be high, it could be low. But in terms of federal legislation, the MORE Act, as well as, and we're assuming the Senate bill, are going to include provisions that allow for expungement, commutations, and pardons for people that have nonviolent cannabis-related charges or convictions. But the problem is that at the federal level, that's a very, very small number because the vast majority of cannabis arrests take place at the state level. So while it's definitely a move in the right direction, this isn't going to have nearly as much impact as it will when states start picking this up. And they increasingly have done so. I mean, Illinois has been issuing blanket expungement for people with cannabis charges and have expunged hundreds of thousands of records so far. There's you know, a number of states are really pushing forward with this pretty heavily, and I think that federal legislation that includes expungement will provide a good message for states to start pursuing the same. And it's entirely possible that whatever legislation eventually gets passed may even provide funding for state programs to be able to expunge people's records faster. Expungement is usually a little bit more, I guess, politically palatable to conservatives than things like commutations and early release and things like that. But, you know, I think that activists are going to be pushing for as much retroactive justice as they can possibly get, because it absolutely does not make any sense for anybody to be in prison for behavior that is now legal. And not only that, but even if you're not imprisoned, the effects of having a cannabis arrest on your record can have terrible collateral consequences for the rest of your life and impact your ability to get education, housing, employment, and a whole host of other things that most people take for granted.
So that we have two issues here. If I understood what you said, Morgan, that there are fewer number of federal Bureau of prisoners who are there for low-level controlled substance issue. This is more of a state issue. And I totally agree with you. I have seen many, many states that are looking to make the product legal have tied in expungement or release as part of the criteria for getting it. Is that – you think there's a groundswell of support for doing both expungement and release?
Absolutely. And, you know, because most people that with cannabis arrests are not in prison, there's much more of an emphasis on expungement and clearing out records. But there is a growing and really you know, powerful movement now to get people released who are currently incarcerated for nonviolent cannabis crimes.
And that was, you think that that would be, and that's on a federal level or state or both?
Actually, it's happening at both levels. You know, groups like the Last Prisoner Project are really bringing a lot of attention to the issue and, you know, finding individual cases where people are serving very lengthy sentences for relatively low level and completely nonviolent violations. So, you know, hopefully we start to see even more as, you know, it's indefensible to be, you know, making this behavior legal while continuing to punish for years and even decades people who are doing things now that are like legal and you know, done by publicly traded companies.
There's another kind of spin-off of that particular subject matter, and that is I have seen a number of complaints in the states that have brought in either medical and or recreational, that the number of people of white skin dominate the people who get the licenses, and that
expungement actually plays into that as well, because there are still some states that prevent you from being involved in the industry if you have a criminal record, sometimes specifically related to cannabis, sometimes specifically related to any sort of felony. It varies from state to state, and we're starting to see those bans being eliminated in state after state. Having fair play in the cannabis industry is just one tiny aspect of a larger restorative justice framework. You know, and we still see a lot of these problems continue to exist after legalization. You know, even in places like Colorado, where we've seen the overall arrest rates go down significantly. So we're talking about tens of thousands of fewer people that are being arrested. You still see massive racial disparities in how, like, public consumption tickets are given out and how minor infractions are given out. So while making cannabis legal doesn't always solve that issue, it does create an improved situation where there are fewer arrests taking place and fewer convictions taking place. But there are larger systemic issues at work that need to be addressed, and cannabis legalization is not going to fix the problem overnight.
Yeah. There are some people who are starting to see conversations about the idea of changing the legal status of cannabis. Is that, and we've had some brief conversations on this in the past, but I'm seeing more that the makeup of the industry will change dramatically with legalization, because the mom and pops are going to have a greatly diminished role. The big multi-state, multi-operators, multinational companies are going to come in and take control of the markets.
Well, I mean, as I mentioned on your show before, I really see the cannabis industry shaping up very much like the beer industry, where you have some large companies that control a significant market share, but then you also have a robust craft industry that also controls a significant market share. You're starting mm-hmm. to see that already play out. And the fact that more and more, and now basically anytime you talk about cannabis legalization in any state, you have to talk about social equity and increasing fairness in the industry. And most of these conversations are also revolving around making sure that small businesses have a means to compete and lowering the barriers to entry. So I think that as long as advocates are continuously working on these issues, I don't think that mom and pops have too much to fear. But it's absolutely vital that they stay involved in the political process and work with advocates to make sure that their interests are protected at both the state and federal level. And you know, I'm very hopeful that that will continue to be the case, because just last week, I believe Senator Schumer stated in an interview that he was going to be crafting the legislation specifically to make sure that gigantic companies don't completely dominate the industry, and that the little guy has an ability to maintain a market share.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Morgan, we're out of time. It always seems to fly when we have you on the show. We've been speaking to Morgan Fox, who is the legislative assistant and liaison for the National Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, D.C. So how can people keep current with what's going on with your organization and your positions on this decriminalization?
Well, you can just go to our website at thecannabisindustry.org, sign up for our newsletter, and we're also available on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram.
Thank you again for joining us today. If you missed any of this interview, this terrific interview with Morgan Fox, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and you can click on a lot of interviews that Morgan has done over the last couple of years with us and learn more about what's going on in the industry. We'll be right back. David, can you hear me?
Oh, Dan, David? By the way, my title is actually Media Relations Director, but spokesperson's fine.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll remember that. Media Relations Director. Okay. So we've been speaking with Morgan Fox, the Media Relations Director for the National Cannabis Industry Association. And if you'd like to learn more about Morgan and his appearances on our show, go to W420RadioNetwork.com. Go to the archives section and look for Morgan. He's been on many, many times. Learn more about the industry. And we'll be right back. So let's just keep going. Now, do you have any thoughts of what could slow the momentum of what's going on?
Well, I think that if we have another nationwide tragedy like the pandemic, that could certainly slow things down. The cannabis industry saw increased sales during the pandemic, it also saw a lot of difficulties that affected them much more heavily than a lot of other businesses because of the current state and federal conflict. And it also significantly slowed down the pace of legislative change at the federal level as well as the state mm-hmm. level. Luckily, we saw a bounce back from that, particularly at the state level. And I think that that will probably continue for the foreseeable future. And really, I don't see anything necessarily slowing down this progress other than politics. When it comes down to it, this is an issue whose time has come. The science is on our side. Freedom and justice are on our side. And I don't think that there's there's really any way to reasonably counter that. I know things might slow down, but I don't think that there's any way that the pendulum is going to swing back, or we're going to be able to put the genie back in the bottle.
Okay, so let's try that. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us in the legislative section again, Morgan Fox, the Public Relations Manager for the National Cannabis Industry Association. Welcome back to the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Morgan, we were going to talk a little bit about what you expect to happen, and I just wanted to bring to the audience's attention that the state of Illinois crossed $100 million in sales in the first 3 months of 2021. $100 million in sales, and about 75% of it is local, but 25% is out-of-staters who are coming in and shopping. It appears that the record growth that we had last year is continuing this year, even though things are uncertain. You've got a lot of states that are rushing to legalize recreational cannabis along with medical. And it appears that there's tremendous momentum. I haven't seen anybody yet. Maybe you have some information for us of what do you think the year-over-year growth rate is going to be this year. But I see a lot of states like Illinois that are just blowing the doors off. So what does the industry association look for from an economic standpoint, business-wise, for 2021? Do you have any forecasts yet?
Unfortunately not. Most of the available forecasts are kind of based around 2025 and assume various legislative changes in a number of states. But the fact is that this industry is growing rapidly, and it's also taking a significantly increasing portion of business away from the unregulated market. Some of that is a combination of the effects of the pandemic and people wanting to make sure that they're getting their cannabis from regulated, safe sources. And part of it is the fact that there are just simply more options available, but also that at a much slower rate, barriers to entry into the industry are starting to decrease. It still has a long way to go, but things are starting to move in the right direction. And at the very least, that's one of the major parts of the conversation when we're looking at cannabis legalization legislation in states that are currently considering it. So, you know, I'm very hopeful that that will continue. And you know, when you're talking about economics, you were right that a certain portion of cannabis business in legal states, it comes from neighboring states as well as tourism. And I think that in New England, that has been a particularly powerful driver for moving or incentivizing states to start moving forward on legislation faster. Because if cannabis is legal in Maine and New York and New Jersey, but not in places, or in Massachusetts, but not in places like Rhode Island and not in places like Pennsylvania, state governments are starting to worry about that money going out of state and worried about missing out on the potential tax revenue and job creation that's taking place in these new industries that admittedly most of them have yet to roll out, but the states that are already in operation are already seeing this happen. So it's really created a huge incentive for lawmakers to stop delaying and start moving forward with the legislation that some of them have been considering off and on for years.
And when we talked about what happened in the state of Illinois and the number that, of the benefit to the state was way above what they had anticipated for their budget, so that they're seeing because of a significant growth, they're looking at maybe potentially a billion to a billion and a half in sales this year, with about 25% of that going as tax revenue to the state. So it's turning rapidly into, in Illinois and some other places, very significant businesses and very significant sources of revenue for these states. I wonder, this whole Northeast corridor was started about the aggressive move in New Jersey to go to the recreational side of the market. And you could see up and down the East Coast when not only did New Jersey pass it, but the state legislature moved in record time to make it available and set up the rules and regulations of how they're going to do business. And I think you're right. I think it scared a lot of people in New York and all the other Northeast Corridor states that weren't playing, that we could be losing a lot of business because of close proximity to get to New Jersey to buy a product. And I think that's been a major catalyst. At the same time, I think it created a situation where people in state governments who weren't fighting like they were in New Jersey and New York and Connecticut and Pennsylvania and Delaware saw what was going on in terms of tax revenue. But you raised an interesting subject in that analysis, which I thought was very important. And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm trying to make sure I understood what you were saying. But it appears to me that a good portion of the incremental growth in the cannabis business is coming from the cannibalization of the illicit market.
That's absolutely correct. Definitely. I mean, every sale that takes place in the regulated market is a sale that doesn't take place in the unregulated market. So, but the fact that we're seeing increasing sales numbers is, you know, we might see some increased adult use rates, but nothing to the level where that is going to suggest, an entirely new buying sector. So the vast majority of these sales that are taking place are sales that would have taken place in the unregulated market but are not. And that is really significant in terms of the impact that the regulated industry is having. Going back to something that you said earlier, I think it's very mm-hmm. dangerous to try to sell cannabis legalization as a tax solution because, we're not talking about, state budget changing money. It clearly helps and can help fund a lot of programs to help undo the harms caused by prohibition. But it's not going to, rescue any state budgets. And mm-hmm. when lawmakers start thinking along those lines, they have a tendency to want to overtax the industry and squeeze every dollar they can out of it, which actually creates a situation where they get less tax money in the long term because it makes it more difficult for regulated businesses to compete with the unregulated market. More sales take place in the unregulated market, and it turns into a vicious cycle. Whereas if you tax cannabis at a lower rate, then it's much more competitive with the unregulated market. You see much more revenue coming into the state long term. So, we really like to try to frame it more in terms of, overall economic activity, job creation, and business development than purely about tax revenue, because that really has a tremendous impact. I think that I saw an estimate from a SUNY study in New York that said that the New York industry may create up to 40,000 more jobs, and that is nothing to laugh at, not to mention mm-hmm. all of the additional economic activity that goes on around direct cannabis sales from ancillary businesses. I remember seeing a couple years after legalization passed in Colorado, talking to people who ran contracting businesses and saying that, they were about to file bankruptcy. And then after legalization, they've never done better business. So all of these things that you don't necessarily think are directly tied to cannabis sales, this industry has a lot of ripple effects in traditional economies.
So as we look at it, as you said earlier, you were talking about the industry's been focused on 2025 and out. Are they underestimating what could happen between now and 2025, you think, in sales?
Well, I just meant that to say that all the economic projections that I've seen focused on 2025, I think that the industry is looking at short and long-term potential benefits and are planning for both. Anything can happen between now and then, and hopefully between now and then we're going to see federal descheduling as well as a number of other states opening up new legal cannabis markets. And businesses are definitely watching that and preparing for it in a number of places. And even governments are starting to plan for it. In D.C. here, the mayor has said last week that they are anticipating Congress removing a rider that has prevented them from being able to regulate cannabis for commercial adult use, and have already started the process of having the regulators draft up regulatory language for licensing and for business operation. So when you're looking at state and local governments that are planning ahead for what they consider to be an eventuality, I think that that's really a good indicator of the way things are going.
One could ask the question, and I will, with so much press and so much discussion about cannabis and decriminalization and all the equity changes and reversal of criminal convictions. And I know this is probably a tough question for somebody from an industry association, but are we overemphasizing, are we spending too much time on this issue?
Absolutely not. I think that it's really important to look at what the total impact of the cannabis prohibition has had in terms of crime and deaths and corruption and the environments that have created a serious need for broader criminal justice reform. Cannabis has been sort of the linchpin or cornerstone for a lot of these much larger systemic and cultural problems that we're starting to grapple with now at an increasing rate. And while cannabis is clearly not the be-all, end-all, it's a very important starting point for a much broader discussions around criminal justice reform in this country, as well as for business reform. I think that as a new industry, we have the possibility to really experiment a lot with different methods and different regulations and different rules about how businesses operate. And especially if you look at it from sort of an environmental standpoint, it presents a huge opportunity to do something that nobody has ever done before. And I think that it's going to drive a lot of innovation, not just at the business level, but at the policy level.
Hmm. We only got about a minute left. Are you reaching out or having any contacts through your organization to what's going on in Europe in terms of deregulation of cannabis?
We're watching it, but we're really focused more on the U.S. market at this point. Once we get a little bit more progress in the U.S. and we can ensure that the cannabis industry here is no longer falling behind at an increasing or a worse and worse rate every year from the global market, then we might consider branching out into the global market ourselves in terms of representing cannabis businesses there. And certainly many of our members have operations in other countries, particularly in the EU and in Latin America. But we're starting to increasingly see it in places like Thailand, in Eastern Bloc countries. So it's something that is really changing quite rapidly and is a really good reason for Congress to start making moves and make sure that we don't fall farther behind the global market.
Yeah. Well, we were speaking with Morgan Fox, who is the communications director for the National Cannabis Industry Association. He's a regular on our show. Morgan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. And if you missed any of this terrific interview with Morgan, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and look for shows over the last couple of years. Morgan's been on probably as much, if not more, than anybody else. And we'll be right back after this message. We're done. Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks, Dan. Enjoy time with the fam.
You're welcome, sir. You bet. Take care. Bye. David? Let's hope he...